Morning. When I was coming to church today, I was talking to Wendy a little about today's sermon. And the description I gave it is, I think, one that you will possibly agree with. The most surreal sermon that I've ever preached. In all honesty, it's scary doing a sermon like this one. But I always say that I believe God can speak through anything. That there's no divide between the sacred and the secular. And at the moment in my own life, one of the challenges God's giving me is to find ways to reach people through popular culture. As a result of which, as I was putting this sermon together, I wound up absolutely fixed on a scene from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah. So, what I'm going to do is just allow that scene to play. And I just want you to think about the words. Just to give you a bit of background, this is from a musical episode. So yeah, as surreal as you might think Buffy the Vampire Slayer already is, this is more. If you'd like to play it, please, Ruth. The line, going through the motions, is one that's really been challenging me the last few weeks since I first saw that episode. Because so often, that is what life becomes. As surreal as Buffy the Vampire Slayer may be, when you strip back all the vampires and nonsense like that, every single human being knows what it feels like to just be going through the motions. To be going through day-to-day life and doing your best, doing all that's good, but you just don't quite feel alive. As Christians, we like to act as though that's something that's unique to non-Christian experience, but that's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. We all of us have had times in our lives when, yes, we went to church, we went to the prayer meetings, we even read our Bibles, but we were just going through the motions. Nothing seemed to penetrate our hearts. And so the challenge to me of this song is simply, going through the motions is not good enough. It isn't what I want. It isn't what God wants. As was already said in the testimonies today, He wants to be real. So what's the solution to those times in our lives when we're just going through the motions? I'd like you to turn. Now you'll be pleased to hear we're jumping from Buffy the Vampire Slayer to John 15. I'll give you a couple of moments to find it. John chapter 15. At first, as I pull out some principles from this verse, you'll wonder how these two things possibly tie together. Hopefully, by the end of the sermon, that'll be clear. These are the words of Jesus. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Just going to repeat that. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he's like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me, and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be given you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. I love the image of the vine and the branches, the idea of this wild vine that's just growing everywhere. And we, every believer, is just a branch on that vine. But just what is Jesus getting at with this idea? I found that in my experience it was easier to actually picture it using a different metaphor of a tree. You see, when I did my geography degree, we studied in rough wood quite a bit, and we saw them coppicing the trees, where they were cutting off branches, cutting things back so that other things could grow. And I remember coming across a branch that it had once been covered with leaves, but it had been cut off from the tree. And that was just lying there, and the leaves were beginning to rot. That's quite key, that idea. You see, the minute that branch is disconnected from the main body of the tree, it's dead. In exactly the same way, we are so close to Christ, grafted into him, that his life flows through us, just as nutrients flow through the roots of a tree or a vine, up through the body and to the branches. So his life is transmitted to us. We become utterly dependent upon him in all things. And one of the challenges that came to me as I considered this sermon is that that is in all things. It's not just in the religious parts of our lives. We're not just connected to God for the moments when we evangelize, or for the moments when we worship, for the moments when we come to church. A branch can't be connected, cut off, reconnected, cut off. The minute you start thinking like that, it's nonsense. No, the minute you are joined to Christ, you become completely linked to the main body. The nutrients flow to you. The life of Christ flows to you. Because that life flows through you, you bear fruit. Now, I considered a bit how to discuss the idea of fruit. My first thought was to think, well, the fruit of the Spirit, the character traits. And yes, that's true. But let's be honest, in this passage, Jesus isn't talking about that. He's talking about our actions, our choices, our decisions. He doesn't talk about character things here. He says, apart from me, you can do nothing. Think about those words. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Everyday life. That falls in this remit too. He doesn't say, apart from me, you can do all your day-to-day stuff and keep things going. You can have all the pleasant conversations. And, well, apart from me, you can't do the religious bit. That's not what he says. He says, apart from me, you can do nothing. When we become part of this, when this verse speaks to us, we become dependent upon him, just as a branch is dependent upon the body of the vine, for everything in our lives. Apart from me, you can do nothing. And then, of course, he comes to this beautiful promise. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be given you. I love that promise. There are things that I've prayed for that I haven't seen, but I believe that I will see them because he is faithful. My job is simply to remain in him. He is the one who answers prayer. So how do we reconcile these two things? This idea that Christian life, just like everybody else's life, can turn into going through the motions with the concept of Christ being our life. Surely the two just don't fit together. And so I wrestled and struggled with that one for a while. And the answer came through another clip. Not from Buffy this time. Rather, I'm going to spin you from Vampire Slayers to Pride and Prejudice. Could someone get the lights again? Second clip, please. And I'll only go partway through this one, Ruth, so I'll tell you when to stop, please. I love that film. I'm a romantic, and I absolutely love that film. I know that lots of people prefer the BBC version, but quite frankly, that one, I just love the way it's done, and the music is beautiful. But here's the thing. That scene, from the very first moment I watched that film, it took on meaning to me. Because suddenly, I was seeing this picture of Keira Knightley playing Lizzie Bennet. She's in love, and she's looking out across the fields, and through the mist, her lover comes. I love that image. She could have seen him a lot further away, except there was mist. And the mist obscured the vision for a time, and at first, you heard that little gasp of, "I think it's him." As she sees the shape, but she can't properly tell because he's too far away. The mist is still obscuring the vision. And so he's coming nearer. I really am a romantic, Anna. But that image, to me, suddenly captured my heart with, this is what it is like with God so many times. So many times he is coming, he is here. The one who is the lover of my soul. I believe with all my heart that every human relationship at its best is an image of the relationship Christ has with us. That's just as true as lover, as it is with father and child. And so that image speaks to me with so much power. This idea of the lover of my soul is coming to me, is close to me, desiring me, just as Adi quoted from Song of Solomon to begin with. But the mist is there. And the mist is why we sometimes get to the stage where we are just going through the motions. You see, John chapter 15 is truth. It's just that sometimes things obscure our vision of that truth, like a mist obscuring the sight of the lover who is close to us. And so I got thinking, what are these mists? There are countless things that can be those mists, but the mist needs to be dispelled by the sunlight. It could be our experience, our emotions. I remember when I went through a phase of depression, when God felt so distant to me, and yet I still was faithful. Even though he didn't feel real, I went through the motions. And ultimately, the depression lifted. But at the time, the emotion was so real, so intense, that all I could think of was a psalm that says, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever?" That's what it felt like. He hadn't changed. The mist was just thick. Martin Luther spoke to me of that time because he looked at the cross and he got a shock when he looked at the cross because he realized that nobody at the cross experienced it as what it was. The cross is the ultimate victory where God triumphs over sin and the devil and everything, where he reconciles the world to himself. There is no greater moment in the history of the world. And yet, ask anyone who was there at the time what their emotions were. There was nobody dancing and waving a flag. Even Jesus' emotions included the cry, my God, why have you forsaken me?" In the middle of the darkest human experiences, you have the mightiest work of God. Your emotions are not true. They are not the guide to truth. They can be a mist that obscures the truth. If your emotions, your feelings are there blocking your way, blocking your vision of God, I can tell you as someone who's been through those times, it will not last forever. And what they tell you is not true. He has not forgotten you. He is still the lover at your side. There's just mist in the way. It could be your circumstances and your situations. It could be, as Sam mentioned, your own view of yourself, your self-loathing. Imagine if instead of looking to him, Lizzie Bennet had looked. "I don't deserve this. Run!" That's what sometimes we do with God. Sometimes we see a love that is so beyond anything we could ever even begin to deserve. A love that doesn't care what we deserve, that says what you deserve doesn't matter to me because I love you. So I make you deserve it in my eyes. That love sometimes just freaks us out a bit. We can't handle it. And so we drown ourselves instead with a sense of, "I'm not worth anything." That's an old English word I absolutely love and it isn't used often enough. That word is balderdash. That's what those senses of self-loathing say. They're nonsense, they're rubbish, they're drivel. God says to you, "You know what? I know how you feel about yourself, and I don't care because I disagree with you. I fundamentally disagree. I say you are an object of my love. You are precious in my sight. Yes, there's rubbish and sin and all those things, but you know what? That's what the cross was for. I've already dealt with that. Stop bringing them up. They've been put to death. They've literally been killed. I say you're good enough." That's God's word on this one. Don't let your self-doubt, your loathing, your guilt, your fear, don't let that be a mist that obscures God from your vision. And then I realized there could be another thing. You see, in Ephesians 1, Paul prays that the eyes of our hearts may be opened or enlightened in order that we may know him. Wait. According to that prayer, it's possible for a Christian's eyes to be closed. Maybe the reality is sometimes we simply haven't learned how to catch sight of God. I think Christianity, we get this image of a one-size-fits-all version of it, where every sermon impacts every person in the same way, and Every person meets with God in the same way through the same songs. Again, that's nonsense because God made us all individually and therefore he relates to us all individually. Yes, some of these things are non-negotiables. They're essential parts of our lives as Christians. Reading the Bible and worship and things like that, they are essential. But within that context, every one of us relates to God differently. John Ortberg, in his book, God is Closer Than You Think, talks about all these different ways, what he calls pathways. There's a copy in the boiler room if anyone wants to pick it up. But he talks about how some people meet with God more closely when they're walking in the countryside, enjoying a beautiful view. For some people, music has power. For some people, words and ideas and concepts have power. You know me, I like to think. I can get captivated with an idea, and I can meet God just sat there, musing over the most obscure thing. I can meet God watching an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, for crying out loud. Each one of us has our own way of relating with God. Our own way, like any branch of that vine, of catching the nutrients that we need. As believers, our part in that is that we need to ask, right, when am I closest to God? If you're closest to God when you're out on a walk, go on more walks. If you find you don't have the time for that, I'm really sorry, but there's nothing more important than spending time with God. So if that's how you meet with God, you need to do it. Find the things that bring you close to God. If something doesn't work, try something else. Don't just be satisfied with going through the motions of life, because God isn't satisfied with that. He wants more for you than that. He wants abundant life. He wants you to get past that point so that you're not like Buffy at the end of that song singing, "When will I feel alive?" You'll be relieved to see that I didn't try hitting those notes. He doesn't want that for you. He wants you to get to the place where instead you sing, "Now I am alive." To the place where the nutrients are coming straight through the vine to you as the branch. You are a branch of the vine. That's the truth. You just maybe haven't quite worked out how to get that life yet from him. The great thing is, just as in that scene in Pride and Prejudice, he has come to you. Just like Darcy walking across the fields to Lizzie Bennet, he's there now, at your side. And yes, just as Adie said, he wants to kiss you. He wants to be close to you. He's there now. You just need to clear the mist. As I said, today's sermon is perhaps the most surreal I have ever preached. I've never imagined that I'd be using a clip from Buffy the Vampire Slayer in a church. But the reality is, God speaks through everything. He is there in all things and he wants to speak to each one of us. Find the way for you to receive this life. Don't be satisfied with anything else. Don't just live life going through the motions. May God bless this word to our hearts.